When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Freddie and Harry podcast on ESPN Radio.
Me and Harry always let the good times roll on ESPN Radio. Amber and Ian are going to try to do our best to do that same thing. Amber Wilson, Ian Fitzsimmons hanging out with you. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Ian, I was stoked to do afternoon drive this week because this was the time slot, Shannon can tell you, that I did more than I think any other time slot for years here on ESPN Radio, and we haven't gotten to do it in a long time. You and I are normally on from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, and so I was stoked to get to do afternoon drive, and then my internet broke.
So where are you right now? Because our next guest is going to get a kick out of this. Where did you go in order to just be here right now?
I considered all options. I have Wi-Fi in my car. I actually even considered doing the radio show from the car, but then I decided that there were some logistical problems in terms of plugging things in. I don't know how I was going to get that to work. Exhausted all resources, and a friend took pity on me, and I am now in like an extra room in my friend's house and bumming off of her internet from her family and completely imposing on them. And I'm on some sort of like makeshift plastic card table right now. I've got some things balanced. My computer's balanced on blocks, but we're making it work, Ian. That's what
modern
we do.
Technology.
We are professionals here.
Andre Snelling, yes, ESPN senior writer at Professor DRZ, joins us in studio to talk some hoop. This is modern technology right here. Now, knowing you got a first-round draft pick just singing bars after bars of old classics, and now you have Amber Wilson balancing on a plastic table ESPN radio on her lap, basically. There you go. Right there, Jordan.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, the look on Amber's face while the first-round pick was singing was priceless. Second, y'all got to forgive me.
The confidence that man has. I'd like to have half of it, you know? That's why you're a first rounder.
Yes. And for me, I'm you got to forgive me for being out of breath. I was at the gym working out, and I was walking over here to come in studio, realized I forgot my ID, and had to sprint back to the gym, grab my ID, and sprint back. It was a harder workout than the actual workout itself.
As you are being
paper towels to wipe the sweat.
You hadn't already showered after your workout, I assume. So now you're just extra sweaty on top of sweaty. So
yeah,
you're making that studio smell good there in Bristol, Connecticut.
Dre, you right now are seriously, he has a white towel that he is completely wiping. Have you ever seen Rocky III when he actually starts to get ready to train Club and beat the hell out of Clubber Lang in a rematch, and he wipes his face off before he kisses his bride? That was Dre right there, just dripping sweat and with a white towel, just washing it all off of his face.
I've got my Nikola Jokic bod. I'm working on getting my Giannis Antetokounmpo back.
Yeah, Nikola Jokic's bod's doing pretty well for that guy. Speaking of heartbreak for the Lakers and heartbreak for the 76ers last night, out of those two, if I made you choose one, Dre, which one's more devastating ultimately?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I tweeted about, so the 76ers game was first. I tweeted like, man, that was such a horrible way to lose. I don't know. And then by the end of the Lakers game, I was like, yeah, I think this one's worse. I think the logistically, the 76ers might have been worse because it was such a comedy of errors in a very short period of time where they were making mistakes, the refs were making mistakes, fouls were not called, you know, just so many things happened in a perfect storm. And then like 8 points in 29 seconds, that's some kind of Reggie Miller, Tracy McGrady, you know, memorable type thing. So I think that might have been worse functionally, but overall, I feel like the Lakers is worse just because of the history. You know, a lot of times you'll see the young team on the way up in the playoffs and they keep bumping their heads against the champion. They can't get, you know, Jordan couldn't get through the Pistons. The Pistons couldn't get through the Celtics. And whenever those types of matchups are happening, the young team almost always, even once they're better, they'll be able to take leads and stuff, but then they'll lose at the last second, and it's so painful. Isaiah Thomas has a turnover to Larry Bird, you know, for those old enough to remember in the 80s, and it's the kind of thing that lingers. The problem for the Lakers is they are the old team and not the young team. So if you're the old team and you can't get past the champion, and you still feel like, okay, well, we played a perfect game and we're all set to finally beat this team, and then you still lose, that just has to be so demoralizing. So I'm not one that feels like, okay, it's over now. I think the Lakers, if they can win game three, they can still make a series of it. But I think that of the two, that's the one that has to be most painful.
Boy, you got to sell me on that one, Dre, because I think this series is over. And I'm a big believer in it. It's always a series until a team loses at home. But this one just feels different. I mentioned earlier, they look defeated, and the Sixers look disgusted.
Yeah.
So how do you think the Lakers actually make this a series?
So because they are actually healthy and they are the old team. You know, again, if we're comparing the two series, in some ways I feel better about the Lakers than the 76ers, because the 76ers, it feels like they're always hanging on by a thread, the thread that's kind of holding Joel Embiid's knee in place. We don't know how long they'll be able to get even the whatever 60% that he is now. And he dropped 34 points yesterday, but he couldn't rebound. And that's a big aspect of his game. And it led directly to that missed shot at the end. I mean, you know, the Hartenstein rebound of the missed shot at the end. So I'm more worried about the 76ers. For the Lakers, they're going back to L.A. We saw D'Angelo Russell show a pulse yesterday, right? After the bad game one. And remember, last season, he essentially got benched against the Nuggets because he was playing so poorly in the playoffs. So for him to come back and have a strong game two, it indicates that he should be present moving forward. And LeBron and AD should continue to be present moving forward. AD's not doing the every other game thing like he was doing last year. He's had two strong games, and now he has the mental image of falling into the Nuggets bench and having the whole team celebrate on his head. I have to feel like he's going to come out and play his best game in game three. And unlike, you know, last year where the Lakers, and even early in the regular season, being competitive against the Nuggets meant they could be competitive, keep it within a few points for three quarters, and then the Nuggets would just run off and leave them in the fourth. In these first two games, the Lakers have actually been the better team for significant portions of the game. And then, you know, then they fumbled at the end. But, I mean, I think that's a little different. It's not that they feel like, well, our best can't beat their best. It's we have to maintain our best longer. So I feel like if they can win game three and get over the mental hurdle of, man, that was such a crushing loss, then, I don't know if I'll pick them to win, but I think they can make it competitive. I'm not sure how long the 76ers can keep doing that.
Andre Snelling's on with us. Dre, we got some time on Freddie and Harry here, so I'm going to push back a little bit on what you just said, because you said that you thought AD might look even better in game three, and I understand, obviously, that they're headed back to Los Angeles, but he was nearly perfect in the first half. He was 11 of 12 from the field in the first couple quarters. Anthony Davis was great. LeBron James was great. D'Angelo Russell, like you said, was good. I just feel like, once again, we're watching a Lakers team that is completely outmatched by this Denver Nuggets team, and really, at the end of the day, they're not going to be able to get it done, because you're seeing the best out of those guys and they can't get it done.
Yeah, I mean, execution is a huge thing. But also, the Denver Nuggets have the best home court advantage in the NBA, because playing at Mile High is a significant factor. Even in like the analytics, right? The Basketball Power Index, BPI, home court advantage is factored in. And so with the Nuggets, their BPI might not be as high as some teams, maybe this year, like the Celtics. But when you factor in the home court advantage, they get like a big boost. And so going back to L.A. is not trivial. And whereas those three players you mentioned, who have all been all-stars at some point, they played great. The role players, the others, did not. And the execution was not there once the Nuggets kind of started getting momentum in the crowd on their side. And one play in particular stood out to me. It was when Austin Reeves, who's had some high points, you know, this season, but not yesterday, he was creating off the dribble, and he could not get a shot up. So then he ended up setting up and kicking out a wide open look to Hachimura. And it was a good shot, but Hachimura missed. But for me, I was like, you know, this it was getting into crunch time. The Nuggets had already come back down. I don't think they had taken the lead yet, but it was getting to be a close game. And I was thinking, if I'm the Lakers, if I'm their coach, I really want LeBron or AD or even D'Lo as the one that I'm running the offense through late. So that possession to me epitomized that they just weren't executing the way they needed to. And those types of executions, momentum, and role players should be better in L.A. than they were in Denver.
You want to talk about home court advantage. You also had the two Jokic brothers up there in the stands. So, I mean, you want to talk about home court. If you haven't seen the video, you have them in the stands. Look, man, go check out the video. Those are two large men, right? I mean, one of them's got a mohawk, and this one dude, I guess, was running his mouth, and the Jokic brothers are not afraid. He tattoos this dude, and normally when another guy gets hit, you're going to come back at him. But when you look at the Jokic brother, you're like, no, I'm good.
Nah.
You're good. You do whatever you want to do. Yeah,
smart.
I'm good.
How much would it take for you to get in the ring
with a Jokic brother?
Well, since I know Nikola has nine figures, I'm asking for at least seven, if not eight. You know, I need something that's going to change my life just in case I have some medical bills. But you know, the Jokic brothers weren't any joke when the Morris twins, who kind of had a reputation for, you know, terrorizing the league a little bit, and one of them got into it with Nikola, and Nikola ended up putting him out, I think, for the season with, like, whiplash. And the other twin was like, yeah, he gonna have to see me. And the Jokic brother said, okay, then you have to see us. And you never heard another word.
Not a peep.
From the Morris twins after that. That's when it's like, yeah, these dudes are serious.
The NBA is investigating, by the way, the Jokic brothers right now for that incident that was caught on camera in the stands, where it appears one of the Jokic brothers might have punched a fan there. Freddie and Harry on ESPN Radio. Andre Snelling's hanging out with Amber and Ian. We are filling in for the guys. So let's go back to the Sixers for a minute, because you said that you don't have much hope here with the Sixers. And I felt like at the end of that game, and you had mentioned it, it was a comedy of errors. There was stuff going wrong all over the court for the last 47 seconds or whatever it was of that game, where the 76ers end up coughing up their lead. Why then do you feel like the 76ers don't have much hope here moving forward as this game heads back home for them?
Well, see, you know, I guess to clarify, I said I feel more confident about the Lakers than the 76ers. That's not the same as I don't have any hope in the 76ers. I'm actually the only of ESPN's writers, basketball writers that do picks each round. I'm the only one that picked the 76ers to win this series before it started. I picked them in six. And so it's not that I don't have hope for them. I think that with Embiid fully healthy, I think they're clearly the better team. If Embiid can play at the level that he's played so far, I think they're slightly the better team. It's just always a question of, can he play? Like in that game one, if you look at it, the 76ers won all of the minutes where Embiid wasn't hurt. You know, even taking into account when he goes to the bench just for rest and stuff. But he got hurt with like 2:49 left in the second quarter, and it was a three-point game. And when he came back in after halftime, they were down by double figures, and then they ended up cutting it to seven. So it's like, if we know he can play and be out there, even if he's not at his best, I still feel like the 76ers have a chance to win this series. It's just every game, every minute, every fall, every jump is like you have to hold your breath, and that's the kind of thing that over a full series, let alone a full playoffs, it's hard to really bank on that.
If you're the Sixers right now, are you looking at long term health with Embiid? Because I mean, laboring is being kind to what we saw with him last night. So if you're the Sixers, how much are you saying, you know what, let's go back and have the docs here, you know, with a little downtime, reevaluate what the heck is going on in that knee? Because I know I would be with a generational-type talent like that Embiid is.
Yeah, it's difficult, though, because as much as he seems like he's on one leg this year, it doesn't look a lot different than most of his playoff series. You know, almost every year at this time, he's dealing with some type of physical issue after the marathon of the NBA season. And one of my hopes as someone that really wants to see Embiid at his best in the postseason was that having the long layoff with the injury, was that if the injury is recovered enough to be functional, that he would have his legs under him in a way we haven't seen so far. And so if I'm the 76ers, yes, I want to ensure that he's, you know, his future is not impacted. And the doctors would have to tell me that, like, hey, him playing here doesn't increase the likelihood that he's going to have to miss the next year or two. But it's hard to hold him back as an asset that, well, we'll develop for next year, because we don't have any evidence that next year won't look just like this year as far as his health in the playoffs. And so with all of the other injuries in the East, this is probably the best opportunity they're going to have to be able to get to at least that conference finals. And so with that in mind, if the doctors don't say absolutely not, then maybe you just got to give it a shot.
Laboring, he still put up 34 points last night. Yes. So that's why, if you're the 76ers, you don't want to give up on him despite their some of the injury woes. Andre Snelling's hanging out with us here on Freddie and Harry. Let's get to tonight's games, Dre. Suns T-Wolves tips off 7:30 p.m., followed by Pacers, Bucks, Mavs at Clippers. Who is most likely out of the teams that are in a hole here, 0-1, who is most likely to try to even it up tonight, Suns, Pacers, or Mavericks?
Well, of course, they're all going to try to even it up.
That's, yes, thank you for calling out my terrible, terrible wording there, Andre. You knew what I was doing, man.
Yeah, that was what I was going to build
who's
into.
Who's most likely to even it up, to be clear?
Yeah, I think that the Mavericks are the, because of these three series, the Mavericks are the only team that I picked to win the series coming in that lost that first game. I thought that the Bucks, even with Giannis out, match up maybe better against the Pacers than when Giannis is in. Giannis is, you know, one of the best players in the NBA, in my opinion, arguably the best. So it's not because of his skill level. It's just because of the size and the way the Pacers play quickly. And with Giannis out, the Bucks don't have to play as many 2 7-foot lineups. So I thought that they could win this series. I feel like Minnesota has been my team for, y'all know this, for 2 years. Y'all have heard me say it. I really think that they're a team that if they and the Nuggets both get through to the second round, the Nuggets gonna have their hands full, because I think the Timberwolves are a squad to be reckoned with. The Mavericks should beat the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard. They don't have an excuse to look like they looked. I heard somebody say the Mavericks are the Cowboys. You know, how they started off in the first half of that game? That was exactly how it looked. And so
that's pretty good.
I have to assume the Mavericks aren't going to do that again. You know? And so if they show up for four quarters instead of two, I think they have the best chance.
Man, if you can, sum up what we're watching with Anthony Edwards, the Ant-Man.
Because, my goodness.
Look, a lot of young stars today, they've got their stylist. You know, they've got their publicist. Mm-hmm. I mean, not this guy.
Yeah.
He's just him.
Yeah.
At 22.
He
right?
is.
If you can, the back and forth between he and KD and what we are truly going, not just right now in the moment, but we can expect to see 2-3 years from now when this dude really starts to hit his stride.
Yeah, so Anthony Edwards, you know, I'm going to make a big statement that I don't know if y'all have realized how big it is. He's become one of my favorite players to watch in the NBA, and he's a Ugga. He's from UGA. I'm from Georgia Tech. We don't fool with the Uggas. But Anthony Edwards is that dude. I love his mentality. I love that he will come to your chest. He doesn't care who it is. I remember somebody, it might have been Malika Andrews, was interviewing him and asking him, what about if you had to face one-on-one with Michael Jordan in his prime? And he was like, you know, Jordan's the GOAT, but I don't think he's guarding me either. Like, that's how confident Edwards is. And so, you know, and his, for those that were around in the 80s and 90s, Dominique Wilkins had the nickname the human highlight reel. Mm-hmm. I think he's kind of handing the baton off to Anthony Edwards. There are a lot of Jordan comparisons, but he is a human highlight reel. When there's the splash reel for the playoffs and they show the best players in the league, they all get one scene. Edwards is the only one that's on there twice because he's on there for that absurd dunk and the absurd block. So I just love all of the growth, everything that we're seeing from him. And, yeah, he's just on the way up. Like, he's a problem this year. In a few years, yeah, he might just be the best we have on the wing in the NBA.
He's so fun, too. I mean, mm-hmm. that moment between him and his favorite player in KD, and yeah. he's calling him an old, a crooked letter.
Yeah.
and KD's laughing. Because what can you do in that moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, shot the ball right over him. Anthony Edwards, certainly one of the next faces. I mean, is it next face of the NBA, or are we already here? I feel like we're kind of already here.
We're kind of already here, but I don't remember at the All-Star break, someone asked LeBron who the next face of the NBA was, and it led to a whole series of discussions. And of course, Wembanyama is an alien. But Anthony Edwards, with his personality, he's going to be a face of the league for the next decade. Whether he's the face or a face, that might be up for grabs. But you're going to see him and know who he is.
Yeah, absolutely. You're also going to know who Andre Snellings is. Check out all of his work on ESPN.com, ESPN senior writer. Also, you can check him out on X at Professor DRZ. Thanks, Dre.
All right, y'all.
The NBA playoffs are on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight as the T-Wolves host the Suns, presented by Indeed. That coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and on Sirius XM Channel 80. Coming up next, we got to talk about the NFL draft. We know about the Bears, okay? We know about the number one overall pick. But Ryan Poles, the general manager of the Bears, is starting to take issue with some of the misperceptions surrounding Caleb Williams. We'll get into that next here on ESPN Radio.
The Freddie and Harry Podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
It's about to be a big blue world for Caleb Williams, as he is expected to be the number one overall pick in the draft on Thursday. The NFL draft will be right here on ESPN Radio. Coverage will begin Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Ian Fitzsimmons will be there for all things NFL draft. Amber and Ian filling in on Freddie and Harry. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. So Caleb Williams is going to be number one. I mean, people are trying to pretend, Ian, like maybe there's some controversy here. Maybe something will happen. Could there be a trade up? Could the Bears go off script? And I mean, come on, get out of town. I feel like they're just trying to make a boring draft more interesting, because Ryan Poles has looked at one quarterback, and it's Caleb Williams. He's going number one.
Yeah. The Washington Commanders brought in four, along with 18 other guys.
Right? And took them to Top Golf.
had a blast. Right, let's see the competitive nature come out here, right? But, you know, yeah, to your point, the Bears literally brought in one quarterback, Caleb Williams. That's the list. I mean, you know, Poles even said earlier today at his presser, like, you're going to find out on Thursday like everybody else, but yes, we know who we're taking. I mean, okay, well.
Well, first of all, if you have the number one overall pick and you don't know who you're taking by Tuesday, the draft is on
good point.
Thursday,
but also,
somebody needs to get fired.
You got some teams that can come in and try and just money whip the hell out of you, right, to try and if Washington, with, you know, him being from the D.C. area, his only fault, in my opinion, in his game or the person is that he went to Gonzaga, because that was our big rival in the D.C. area when I went to high school at Georgetown Prep. So that's his only fault. But you have the hometown kid, the connection with Cliff Kingsbury, who was a senior analyst there last year, with the USC Trojans. They have a very close relationship. And so if the Washington Commanders tried to move heaven and earth to move up one spot, that's the only thing. But the Bears would have to be willing. And the Bears aren't willing. They're taking Caleb Williams. And I think it's a great landing spot for any rookie quarterback. There's two in my opinion. It's Minnesota and Chicago. Because Chicago was a 7-win team. They weren't a 1 or 2-win team. For people who may have forgotten, they got that pick with Carolina last year in the trade where the Panthers took Bryce Young. Well, now here they are with the 9th overall and the 1st overall. And that defense in the last six weeks of the season, you can make the case, Amber, the Bears had the best unit. Their O-line's okay. You have 2,000-yard receivers on both sides with Keenan Allen now and DJ Moore. Decent running back room. I mean, for a rookie quarterback, it's a pretty damn good situation to come into. And for people saying that, you know, Caleb Williams is all about himself, that could not be further from the truth.
Well, and let's get into that, because Ryan Poles has been asked, of course, extensively about Caleb Williams. And here is the Bears general manager addressing the Hollywood label that's certain to get attached to Williams.
Really intelligent guy. Came across as a really good teammate. Easy to talk to, down to earth. You know, we've talked through this process about, you know, the whole Hollywood thing. He's all ball, wants to work, wants to get better, wants to win as a team. That's the number one thing for him, on top of being successful. You know, I think the biggest thing is, like, does he fit in our culture and what we're trying to do? And all signs were that he does. So that was positive. We know what we're going to do, but everyone's going to have to wait till Thursday to go there.
Isn't everybody a little bit Hollywood these days, though? I don't know if that's the knock that it used to be. We used to be really concerned about these young guys. If they were coming out, and they seemed like they were really into the fame and the fortune and all of that. Now everyone's in control of their own brand. Everyone's a star. You're a star on the gram from the time you're like 16 years old if you're as good as Caleb Williams. That's the reality of the situation. I feel like everybody in this generation's a little bit Hollywood. So honestly, as long as they also additionally have the work ethic, who the heck cares?
Yeah, and I think here, though, Amber, is a little bit different. The question was about Hollywood, because there's this unbelievable misconception about Williams that he doesn't care about teammates. He only cares about himself. And that couldn't be further from the truth. As a matter of fact, we talked to Lincoln Riley, his head coach at USC, about that very thing. Here's what he said.
When you talk to the people that have been around him, the coaches, the players, his friends, I mean, he is certainly a person that interacts great with others, has, you know, really a lot of times puts others in front of himself, and has always been a tremendous teammate.
Yeah, and so this part of Caleb Williams and this misconception about him drives me insane. Because, like, go back to, remember that picture after they lost to Utah, and he did his job. You know, with about a minute and a half to go, he leads USC down the field for a go-ahead touchdown. The defense gives up the honey, as it happened a ton at USC. And after the game, you saw this picture of Caleb Williams sitting by himself on the bench, just dejected. And people are like, look, he doesn't care about anybody else. He's by himself on the bench. I was standing right there. We had the call here on ESPN Radio. And before that kick goes through the uprights, as time expires to give Utah the win at USC, Caleb Williams is standing up going crazy, cheering on his defense. When the kick went through the uprights, that's when you saw him go over to the bench dejected, like, son of a, how did we lose this game? He was as invested as any human out there that was wearing USC colors. And then you have the picture of him crying with his mom, you know, in the stands after they were eliminated from Pac-12 title contention to Washington. We were at that game also. Should he have gone up the tunnel? Sure. Right? Okay. But this is what we're knocking the young man about, caring that much.
Right.
That's where we are right now when it comes to draft week and the weeks leading up to the draft, because we've heard this for a good month and a half, and nothing could be further from the truth about Caleb Williams. A dude wants to win more for the guy next to him than he does himself.
You're darned if you do, darned if you don't, if you're Caleb Williams. You sit by yourself, you don't care. You don't care about anybody. You cry, you care too much. Now you're emotional. Now you need your mommy. Like, that whole thing. It drives me insane as a mother, by the way, also. Because, I mean, what are we doing? We're insulting guys that hug their mother? What are we doing? Anyways, but the point is that all of this stuff circles Caleb Williams because he's going to be the number one overall pick, right? And I mean, that's the reality of it. You kind of almost have to conjure up some sort of controversy, because I think, frankly, just the coverage alone ends up warning that, because it's otherwise, what's the story? He's really good. Everyone thinks he's really good. Everyone knows he's going to go number one. There's an overarching consensus that he should go number one. And that's not exciting when we have to fill a lot of airtime leading up to an NFL draft. So there's a lot of digging, and there's a lot of analyzing, and there's a lot of picking apart. And in fairness to the people doing that, it is more often than not that these guys will not work out. And that is even true as a number one overall pick. The chances are that Caleb Williams only has about, what, a 50% chance. And that's as the number one overall pick of actually turning into a decent quarterback. It is not a good hit rate. So you find every reason you can, every minute reason you can to be critical of the player that, frankly, everybody agrees is pretty darn good.
Yeah, and to your point on that, Amber, you and I talked about this on our show about a month ago, where over the last 15 years, there have been 46 quarterbacks taken in the first round. You can legitimately label, and I'm talking like nuclear bust, 23 of them. Half, to your point, half of them taken in the first round, completely flamed out for the team that drafted them. So it is, and that's why you see so many teams that will take a chance on a player they think is can be a franchise quarterback, because you every general manager doesn't want to be the one that missed on the guy. So even if it's not a consensus, right, you still might reach because you don't want to be the one that missed.
It's a crapshoot. Any way you cut it, it's a crapshoot. Now, I will say, if I'm the Bears, I'm definitely going Caleb, because it is Absolutely. Such an overwhelming consensus that even if Caleb ends up being a whiff, you're not going to be able to fault them terribly for trying it out, right? For taking it. If it's somebody who's reaching, if you're trading all the way up for a Trey Lance, if you're reaching and then it doesn't work out, then there can be a lot of criticism on the back end. But here, it may not work out, but nobody's going to be particularly critical of the Bears trying, because most people agree that this is where Caleb Williams should go. So the draft, Ian, then ends up getting interesting at number two. And for me, that's really when the NFL draft starts, because we know what is going to happen there at number one. And goodness forbid, if these damn Bears, Ian, they make me wait. If they let that clock, Ryan, I am talking to you, Mr. Poles. If you let that clock tick all the way down on Thursday, I am just waiting there when we all know what you're doing.
And then Goodell walks up to the podium. Producer, right? Like, I'm sorry, Amber, but it's going to happen. Look, they want their logo up there. Nobody does this better or worse, depending on your point of view, than Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones and the Cowboys will be on the clock for 9 minutes and 55 seconds. Why? Because he wants that free advertisement, that logo, on your TV.
Like, we don't know who the Dallas Cowboys
time.
Are, though?
I'm just telling you. And the Bears, if they're smart, they're going to take 9 damn minutes, right? And their excuse can be, well, we were still fielding phone calls, you know, in case we just got money whipped by some team. But it's going to happen. But to your point, I agree with you. The draft does start at number two. And that to me, is Jaden Daniels. Yeah, and we've had a lot of people. Our own Dan Orlovsky believes that, you know, Jaden should be the number one overall pick. Lewis Riddick thinks that Jaden Daniels is better than Caleb Williams. And it's all in the eye of the beholder. I told you guys a story in our pre-show meeting, and I had the privilege of being able to call games with Bill Polian for the better half of 5-6 years here on ESPN Radio. And we were asking him about the draft. And then I worked about 4 drafts with Bill Polian. And he told this great story when he came to drafting Peyton Manning over Ryan Leaf. Now, this is going to sound nuts, because now we know how it all turned out, right? But when it came down to evaluating Manning and Leaf, it was this close that Bill Polian, Hall of Fame general manager in Canton, went and watched every single pass that Manning and Leaf threw in their entire college careers twice. And one day, it was maybe a week before the draft, and he walks in to the film room, and there's the great Tom Moore and the late, great Herman Mudd just sitting there watching film. Start, stop, you know, just going over stuff. And Bill goes, don't know if we do, if it's Manning. They both stopped, turned around, looked at him like he was a football fool, and said, why? He said, well, he's not very accurate beyond 58 yards. Tom Moore turned around, looked at Herman Mudd. Mudd looked at Bill and said, then we won't call any damn plays beyond 59. We're taking Manning. And the rest is literally football history. But that's how intense and how much you don't want to miss on the guy. And that's how, you know, how they go over these things with a fine-tooth comb. I mean, every single thing, to the point where you're watching every throw twice and you're going, the 58-yard mark is the difference? Hell no. They end up making the right decision. But could you imagine if they went the other route? Damn, right? I mean, it's crazy, but that's the science that goes into evaluating the most important position in sports.
you look like a genius if you make the right choice. You look like a buffoon if you make the wrong choice. And really, all of it is just one big crapshoot. Everyone's guessing at the end of the day. So you'll tune in for that Thursday right here on ESPN Radio, 7 p.m. Eastern. Ian Fitzsimmons will be there on the coverage of the NFL draft. But coming up next here on Freddie and Harry with Amber and Ian filling in for the guys, what is the worst food-related incident you've ever had? Ian Fitzsimmons has one for us. That's next on ESPN Radio.
The Freddie and Harry Podcast.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
What is the worst food-related incident you have ever had? Amber and Ian filling in on Freddie and Harry on ESPN Radio. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs for protection on the road and on the water. See how much you can save. 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and check them out at progressive.com. So we are opening up the phone lines to you, America, because what would Freddie and Harry be without some phone calls? 888-SAY-ESPN. If you want to chime in, what is the worst food-related incident that you have ever had? Ian Fitzsimmons is going to explain where the mastermind for this segment came from. 888-729-3776. Why are we doing this topic, Ian?
Because we were worried about a near-death experience that was going to happen at my oldest daughter Rowan's senior party. So for people who may not know her backstory, she raised over $100,000 for her hospital, Texas Scottish Rite Hospital, with a neighborhood fundraiser, this crawfish boil that we would have. It started in our backyard. Then up to the last one we did, we had to block the damn street off, and kids are running around like bandits and, just slamming crawfish like world champions. So for her senior party, she wanted to have one final crawfish boil before she goes off to college. And so she's inviting, the friends, and it was an invite list and whatnot. And she said, yeah, this one friend of mine, Sal, he really wants to come, but he's allergic to fish. And I said, well, I'm making a massive vat of red beans and rice. We got boudin. We were ordering pizzas. There's other. He goes, oh, yeah. So Sal shows up. So the first wave of mud bugs come out, and Michael Dagenhart cooks them. It's amazing. Big size. We got the selects. And it was perfect. Just the right amount of spice. Just a little sweat on the brow, right?
For those of you who couldn't guess, Ian Fitzsimmons is from Louisiana.
Yes. Continue. The DNA is there. He passed down to the kiddos, right? Yeah, here in Dallas, Texas. So all the kids, we let them go first, and I kind of nudge my way into a corner on the table. And this kid's next to me, he's going, man, these things are amazing. I've never had them before. And I'm looking at him, and he's got them upside down the way he's trying to peel them. I said, look, dude, crack the head off, and then it's basically shrimp. Just take your thumb and your index finger, three notches in, wrap it, and then put it between your teeth, pinch and eat. Done.
Which is not what you do with shrimp, and you don't suck the heads of shrimp.
I know, not
quite the same as shrimp.
I don't suck the heads. I cracked that juice, those spices onto the potatoes and the corn. But anyway, so this kid Sal then turns and starts doing it the correct way, and he's like, "Oh my God, you can eat so much more. This is so much faster. This is amazing." And I said, "Well, I'm glad you like it, man." By the way, and I showed him the corn trick and potatoes. He starts doing that. So little did I know that this is the young man who Rowan told me about that is allergic to fish. And so all of a sudden he says, I'm so glad I could eat this. I'm allergic to fish. And I went, what? You're Sal? He's like, yeah. So I have just taught this young man how to ingest a lot faster and a higher quantity of something that could kill him. Right? And so he's now turned his hat around backwards. I mean, he's just slamming crawfish like a world champion. And I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, no, I came prepared, Mr. Ian. I got my EpiPen, and he pulls out a bag of Benadryl. I'm like, what is this kid? Are you kidding me? And all of a sudden now some other adults around the table are going, dude, you couldn't think to tell an adult? Like, you might die? Or at least go in an apoplectic shock? And he's like, but I came prepared. I'm good. I'm still here. I'm breathing good. We're all good.
I mean, so you passed out. You can't give yourself the EpiPen. Right? Somebody else needs this information.
I'm like, do we have a medical attorney here? I need a waiver to be signed before this kid eats another mud bug.
You got some liability.
Luckily, we did have one in John Stevenson, ironically. But anyway, so this kid became a legend. After all the kids left, all the adults are still in here going, I can't believe this kid came just because he wanted to try crawfish. He'd been dying to, and he was risking death.
Almost literally.
Risking death to eat crawfish. I mean, this kid is now a legend to the point we're telling his story here on ESPN Radio. My wife, the very first thing she did on Sunday morning was have Rowan get in touch with Sal to make sure Sal was still alive. Good news, Sal's still with us. And it was, as he said, well worth it to risk death to know that he can now eat crawfish.
No,
there you go.
Nothing's worth it. I've had crawfish. It's all right. It's pretty good fried. It's certainly not good enough, though, to in fact risk death. My only food-related story, and you can chime in, 888-SAY-ESPN, that I can think of, is that I did almost poison an ex-boyfriend once who was allergic to peanuts. I didn't actually mean to, although in hindsight,
I'm calling BS.
Don't know how sad I am.
I'm calling
it,
BS already.
You know what I mean?
I mean, in hindsight,
he deserved it a little bit, but that wasn't why I did it, okay? That was not why I did it. I had no idea he was allergic to peanuts.
Try this, little boy.
He was allergic to peanuts. And I did not know that apparently if you have a very severe peanut allergy, peanuts are actually related to the pea family and not the nut family. And so you end up being allergic to peas. So I had a Super Bowl party and I served pea pods as part of a veggie tray, you know, pea pods that you put in ranch and whatever.
Yeah.
And so they contaminated everything. And so he's in the bathroom tossing his cookies all night because apparently I poisoned him with pea pods. It was not peanuts. It was innocent. We'll get to your phone calls next. 888-SAY-ESPN. This is Freddie and Harry on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Freddie and Harry podcast on ESPN Radio. You can also listen to Freddie and Harry live weekdays from 3 to 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on Sirius XM Channel 80. You can also watch and listen on the ESPN app. The Freddie and Harry podcast.